Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. Be seated, please. The first case in our calendar is 00983, Board of Education of the Gehanna Jefferson Local School District versus Thomas Zeno, Tax Commissioner, Mr. Hughes.
There's a right in mandamus to order them to rule, isn't there?
As a practical reality, if this court were to rule that the sole exclusive jurisdiction with the Housing Council, we wouldn't be filing action in mandamus, which is frankly undrafted.
Okay, so you're not without remedy if, in fact, we find exclusive jurisdiction in the Housing Commissioner.
That is correct. It's just that we believe the statute does provide concurrent jurisdiction, and there are situations when the public and the statute is best served by giving the jurisdiction to the tax commissioner.
Sir, what concerned me in this case is that you give these kind of abatements or whatever it might be, these breaks to businesses to get them to come in to preserve jobs or to create jobs, and then down the line, somebody like your client comes in and says, well, wait a minute, that was a bad deal. And now this should all go back on the taxable duplicate. Isn't that changing the rules in the middle of the stream?
Frankly, my client shared that concern. In advance of this abatement being granted, they informed the city of the problem they're about to do. My client has no intention of pulling the rug out of people's legitimate expectations.
Well, what does that mean? Their legitimate expectations is what they agreed to at the inception of the arrangement, isn't it?
That's correct. And in advance of the parties taking this risk of granting the abatement under the old law and not complying with the new law, the schools had already informed the city and the developer that that would not be a valid abatement. So this was not a question where people went in blind thinking there was no risk.
So you're not trying to alter those kinds of arrangements that were entered into before the new law?
That is correct. There are certain...
Because that would be unfair, wouldn't it?
The statute provides a grandfather clause for arrangements were entered into under the old law, or certain things completed afterwards, but where there was expectation it would be completed. And it's our position that this project, done long after the law changed, is not covered by the grandfather clause.
Because that'd be a pretty dangerous thing for a lawyer to be advising a client. Yeah, we've agreed with the city of Toledo now to do thus, thus, and thus, and you get exempt for this, and then 3 years down the line, one of your clients or a Board of Education comes in and sets aside that agreement. I mean, that could be very dangerous for giving any legal advice or consummating any deals, couldn't it?
Well, I think whenever a person wants to get back with the government, they need to ensure that the government followed all the requisite formalities that are required of the statute.
That's a new concept.
Contracts with the government are only can be done in compliance with the statute. The statute gives express and limited authority to cities to get abatements.
Do you warn all prospective tax breakers that you're going to file a lawsuit if that is done?
These cases involve a general issue of what was grandfathered or not grandfathered, and that matter was discussed with both clients involved in this particular abatement area. Approached the city and the developer and told them.
Are there some that you agree with?
Yes. There are, within the same CRA, there are projects that are grandfathered in the old law that have not been challenged.
So there are some that you don't challenge. You don't challenge everyone that is granted.
That's correct.
Well, in fact, they can seek your approval.
In fact, community prevents CRA provision as amended by Senate Bill 19 in 1994 require for CRA that they have the approval of the schools unless certain enumerated criteria are met. No approval was sought in the schools in this case.
I'd like to get to the statutory interpretation. I guess the board, as you know, says that 37, 35, 65 does not provide for an appeal to the tax commissioner, and you've relied on code section 57, 27, I guess. You've argued in your brief, I'd like to hear your strongest argument. Why, in the absence of language, specific language in the section that creates the CRA and the exemption, why we would look to another section of the code to find jurisdiction in the tax commissioner or the board?
I believe the one section creates a general grant of jurisdiction to the tax commissioner. That section alone clearly says any property. Any complaints can the continuing exemption of any property. And there's nothing within that section that would limit any exempt property to state. There is nothing also in the CRA provision that expressly would limit the authority of the tax commission. It says there is another procedure to object to the housing council. But frankly, I think the purpose of the housing council objections was to, when a local business did not keep their promises under the abatement contract. If you look at that section, it talks about reviewing counting the jobs created, the investment made, whether they comply or not. In fact, it even says the housing council may only revoke or refer to the legislature, local legislature, by the revocation after 1 year. They must give them a chance to comply. What if it were not valid from the initial period? Law just did not permit the abatement, as we argue in this case. This is not a test of whether they complied. I think it was really designed more of a situation to see a local officer determining local compliance with the local contract. We have a challenge based on the state law that will apply uniformly throughout the state. And I think that's most appropriately addressed by the tax commission. And frankly, other areas of abatement law, not just CRAs, have the same sort of issue. Every enterprise owner TIF exemption has a tax incentive review council that has the same authority to refer abatements which has been non-compliant to legislative authority locally for revocation. If the tax commissioner hears those objections, there is no difference in about the authority of a local housing council for review of fines annually to refer for revocation. And with CRA, it's called housing council, other exemptions, tax incentive review council.
So what is your thought or your fear that different housing officers in different locations could come up with differing conclusions based on the same criteria? And this would make it uniform?
And it also, that is wrong as well as the fact that when you're challenging on legal grounds, you're basically asking the city to say what you did wasn't authorized. And the abatements you just promised to someone, you didn't have the power to promise. It's one thing to ask the city to enforce their own contract. They promised 100 jobs in return for this abatement. And the city wants them to make sure they have those 100 jobs. They're likely to enforce it. When the schools go object and say the school to the city, you abate the school taxes without legal authority, it's hardly a due process here if you have an interested party. The city doesn't want to revoke the abatement and say that it's property under that contract we signed with you, promising you abatement, we're in default. I think what you end up with is the situation you have here. 2 years later, they don't want to address the issue. That's the problem of asking those types of questions you refer to the housing council or the housing officer.
You say they don't want to address the issue. What if they do address the issue and just say, no, we adhere to our original agreement?
The statute then provides for us to have an appeal to common pleas for them. What would you have is...
So if there's a violation of law, there is a way to correct it.
Yes, but in the meantime, you have a situation here. You can be delayed forever. You can have varying interpretations. Statute, housing officer around the state. The school doesn't know their funding. They aren't getting a rapid decision.
Second, what's the standard of the appeal? Is it abuse of discretion or is it de novo?
There is no case law on it because it's never happened, and there's nothing in the statute that says what the standard is. That's the other business going there. It's a very unknown territory. Proceedings for the tax commissioner. Procedures and standards are
well, you said earlier that the council has the authority only to determine whether there's been a violation of the exemption in some way, but your appeal to the council in this case, I guess you must be arguing that the council does have the authority to go to the underlying, to the original grant of the CRA, the exemption, is that right? You're going to test their authority, I guess.
I believe it was unknown of how far their authority reached and out of an abundance of caution and problems over places. The Court of Appeals case addresses the auditor's authority to revoke CRA exemption, holding the right to do so, expressed some of those concerns about how extensive the authority of the Housing Council was, what grounds they could revoke on, and whether parties other than the property owner himself has standing. So there is an open question about how extensive that housing authority or housing council authority is and whether it would be if you grant the floor to the tax commissioner, but there is no answer to that question yet. See, essentially what you have is two different methods of addressing exemption. One standard method that's been for all tax exemptions, the appealing to the tax commissioner. And then you have another method that appears to be designed for the unique needs of non-compliance with the contract granted the CRA tax exemption. What you have here is two different statutes. They both grant the authority to revoke and abate. But there's no need to decide that there may only be one way. In fact, this court in the past has rejected attempts to find that there's only one weapon of removing the property from the tax exemption boards. In state and rural, it's relevant that this court concern the local auditor struck a non-compliant property from the tax exemption list, the exempt list. And the question is whether the tax commissioner alone had the authority to do that. Clearly, the tax commissioner can add a property to the list and remove it. And did that imply that he gave the auditor's authority to remove it from the list? This court held it did not. We have the same situation here. A housing officer can add a property exempt list, can also remove it under certain circumstances. That power to add to the list, this court has already held. But the power to add to the list does not impliedly negate another officer's authority to remove it from this list. So in this case, it is the only way to give meaning to both statutes is to find concurrent authority. And frankly, I think the auditor still has authority to remove the exempt list under the statute. The auditor, and actually they did a fourth way, a declaratory judgment action. And this was pursued by another school board in a different case now pending before this case, Wilmington Board of Education versus County Commissioners. So actually there are probably several ways to remove from the list. And the only way to get meaning to each of those statutes is to find concurrent authority in each of those tribunals.
Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Ms. Shambaugh.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the Court. The Chief Justice in one of his earlier questions, Mr. Hughes, I think zeroed in on the main difference that we have between this provision under the Community Reinvestment Area and some of the other provisions that provide for tax incentives. If you, and the reason that revised code section 5715.27E does not apply is because the Community Reinvestment Area statute as a whole confer exclusive jurisdiction on the local authorities, which are the housing officer, the council, the legislative authority, and there's no mention in those statutory provisions of the tax commissioner being involved in either the application or the revocation of these types of exemptions. And I think the question that we need to look at is, why is there no reference in those provisions to the tax commissioner? And I think the answer to that is because the General Assembly intended to leave the tax commissioner out of the loop in these particular types of exemption provisions.
Well, is it true that the housing officer didn't act in this case? Mr. Hughes said 2 years have passed. And
I believe that may be true. However, I think Justice Douglas keyed in on that. If the officer is refusing to perform his duty, I think in Mr. Hughes' course of action is to request a mandamus against the housing officer.
But that appears to me to be very frustrating that Mr. Hughes would have to resort to the extraordinary writ of mandamus to get something that you're contending is the appropriate procedure, but we're seeing that it isn't efficient, it isn't being done in a timely way.
Well, I agree that it probably is very frustrating for Mr. Hughes, but I think you still need to look back at the entire chapter under the Community Reinvestment Area. And if you look at that chapter, and I know in the past this court in determining whether or not there's concurrent or exclusive jurisdiction has looked at the entire chapter of the revised code, of the revised code provisions. And I think it's very obvious that in these exemptions, the General Assembly intended to leave the tax commissioner out of these types of provisions. And I think that becomes obvious when you look at, for instance, the tax incentive, the tax increment financing provisions, which are available to both municipal corporations and also to townships. And in those provisions, there's a specific statement in the statute that the tax commissioner, that the exemption shall be claimed in the same manner as other real property tax exemptions, which means that you apply to the tax commissioner and the tax commissioner considers the application and it goes through that avenue. Likewise, in the enterprise zone statutes, the tax commissioner, there's an express statement in those statutes that the tax commissioner shall administer those tax incentives. So I think we have a very different statutory scheme in this particular area.
Council, there has to be some meaningful right to a remedy to the school district, right?
Yeah.
The Constitution requires it.
Yeah.
So how does that meaningful remedy work for the school district? They file an application. The local authority that granted this tax abatement doesn't want to act. You're saying that's where it should be, and you bring mandamus to force them to act. What happens then? What's the standard of review to get you the right remedy? Do you get a de novo trial in the court of common pleas?
In the court of common pleas? You mean in the mandamus action?
No. If
say you bring your mandamus action, and this is a convoluted rights remedy that you're suggesting, so you bring your mandamus action, and they're ordered to act, and they eventually act, and they say, no, this thing's fine. Now, there's apparently a right of appeal before the county police.
Yes,
what's the standard of review? Is that a trial de novo, or is it abuse of discretion?
Well, I agree with Mr. Hughes' answer to that. I'm not sure it's clear what their standard of review is because it does not specify in the statute what it is.
So if it's not specified, then isn't that inherently a lack of a right to appeal for it? I mean,
no,
if you can't answer that question, how do they have a meaningful...
Well, I don't believe that it's not a meaningful remedy because they do have that right of appeal. The statutory scheme sets out the very way that they are to pursue these...
But you're here representing the state of Ohio, and you can't tell us what the trial court can do once it gets there, whether they have to say, okay, you have to show an abuse of discretion on the part of the local authority in their decision, or whether the trial court gets to look at this fresh.
There was a decision that was taken to the Court of Appeals under the Community Reinvestment Areas, and that statute versus Dublin. There was a 10th District Court of Appeals, and I believe the lower court did accept stipulations of fact, and it seems to me that in that particular case that the Common Pleas Court did consider that to be a de novo type of hearing where they looked at the facts of the case. And then
that would be a little more meaningful than having to just take what the local authority. I mean, you do understand what a dilemma a school district is presented with in these abatement.
I do understand that.
Okay. I mean, the whole thing, as it's set up, there's enormous incentive to the municipalities to just go along with it because they're looking at increasing their tax revenues while they've sacrificed the revenues to the school district. They don't care that in order to get a little more income tax money, they've just chopped off the school district at the kneecaps.
Well, I understand that the school district really does have a dilemma here, but I think that what we need to concentrate on this particular case is whether or not the statute does give jurisdiction to the tax commissioner to hear these types of reviews. And I think also some of the comments that Justice made earlier about the type of tax exemption that we have here is very relevant because this is a local incentive type of exemption, and I think there is some concern of whether or not 2 years down the line or 3 years down the line that someone could come in and take the tax exemption away from the property owner.
No, isn't the basis for taking it away is they haven't conformed, they haven't done what they promised?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, I mean, how is that cheating them? I mean, the person that's getting the tax abatement isn't providing the jobs or whatever they promised to do.
It's fulfilling their agreement.
The deal is, how are they being cheated?
Well, I think you're raising an interesting question then there also, because and as you say, the statute is limited as far as the revocation of the exemption, then the school board's remedy that they're seeking, I don't know if that falls under either one of those two provisions. It sounds to me, if you look at the school board's argument, that what they're really saying is that this particular exemption shouldn't have been granted in the first place. And I believe that is their argument, then, that they were correct in pursuing that claim as they did with the housing officer, and that they need to file the mandamus against the housing officer and get the court to order the housing officer to act.
The case was filed in December of 1998 by the school. That was more than 2 years ago. It sounds like it was maybe filed concurrent with the board claim. Is it possible that the board, or just the hearing officer, didn't rule because he was waiting for this decision to tell him he had the authority to go forward or not?
I have no information that would indicate that that's the reason why the housing officer hasn't been active.
But certainly the housing officer knew that they also filed here and this matter was working to their court
system. That may be, I'm not sure about that, Your Honor. Just before I turn it over to my colleague, I would just like to emphasize that there's a very unique statutory scheme in these particular provisions, that it does not include the tax commissioner and the application or the administration. And I think that the reason for that is that the General Assembly clearly intended that the tax commissioner not be involved in these types of situations. Thank you,
Ms. Shambaugh. Mr. Koenig.
My name is James Koenig, and I represent the applicant, Duke Realty. I'd like to address, I think there's a misconception here on what actually did happen before the Housing Council. The complaint in this case was filed in December 1998 for the tax commission. My records indicate that the matter before the Housing Council, that appeal was filed 1 year later in December 1999. I believe that was filed after the tax commissioner had ruled that he did not have jurisdiction. Therefore, we did not have a two-year period where the Housing Council had not acted. And it may well be, Your Honor, that they're familiar with this case and they may be waiting for this decision by this court.
Well, you don't have a two-year period. You only have a one-year period they're waiting so far.
That's correct. After this case was filed, after the tax commissioner had already ruled it out.
Well, isn't it 1 year an unreasonable time to grant a hearing to a school board on this kind of issue?
Your Honor, it may well be that
it isn't like they're doing these things voluminously every day.
Your Honor, I cannot speak as to why I'm
But I think that's important. But I'd like to go to the statutory construction with you because you make that argument pretty strongly. I understand the difference between special taking precedence over the general.
Right.
But that's only so, is it not, where there's a conflict.
Yes, Your Honor, I think that we can point out why there will be a conflict here.
All right, well, before you do, let me just ask my question, if you will, please. That section says any property. Therefore, does that not put it in a position where it does not conflict?
Yeah, I would like to address that. Your Honor, in subdivision A, 57.27, the term other any property is used as well. In that case, that provision provides that an owner of any property may file an exemption application with the tax commission. We know that the use of the term any property in subdivision A is restricted by this court's decision in Rickenbacker, which basically provides that if you have property located in a community reinvestment area, you must file that application with the housing officer. You cannot file the application with the tax commission and expect to get relief. We believe that that same analysis which restricts the use of the term any property subdivision A should also apply to subdivision E, such that the specific provisions of the community reinvestment statutory provisions will prevail over the general. We think you need to do that or you'll have an inconsistency in the law where in one instance specific prevail over the general and in another it does not. And we see no reason for that inconsistency.
If they filed a mandamus action, would you seek to intervene as the real party in interest?
I think that we as the taxpayer would have the right to participate.
I think I agree with that. Then would you oppose the mandamus to holding a hearing? Because if they don't ever hold a hearing, you can't lose.
Your Honor, I think that hearing is required under the statute. It's not so specified. It does say that the Housing Council appeals are brought to them, and then any appeal decision of the Housing Council is brought to the Court of Town.
Yeah, but there's no penalty for ignoring the statute.
Your Honor, I think that may be a matter that needs to be addressed as part of the statutory interpretation.
Well, but maybe that's the reason you would interpret the 3735. Or the 571527E challenge broadly when it says any property.
Again, Your Honor, this court in Rickenbacker provided that with regard to tax exemption property, specific availability in general, we think that that consistency of law would be applied uniformly in this case.
Well, would it also be your argument, I guess I don't hear you saying it, but, and I didn't hear it from Ms. Shambaugh, but do we determine jurisdiction, statutory jurisdiction, by the inaction of one public entity?
No, I think we look at jurisdiction as a matter of statutory interpretation. In this case, we have a specific statutory regime which identifies how exemptions are to be granted, how they're to be revoked, and what appeal procedures there are. And that, for this act, statutory scheme excludes the tax commission. So under a statutory construction maxim, we should be able to say that the tax commission was purposely excluded by the general assembly. Your Honor, my time is up. The Super Realty respectfully requests this court to confirm this decision and award the tax.
Thank you, Mr. Koenig. Mr. Hughes, you've saved a minute of your time.
Mr. Hughes, I'm just curious, how much per year dollar amount is just being paid to the development from these schools?
And we have an evaluation of this property. The reason it's significant is because the CRA itself and all the other properties in this case would apply to is very large. It's probably one of the largest such projects in Central Ohio. So it would be,
Mr. Hughes, can you? I'm not clear regarding the procedural history here. Under 67, 37, 50, 35, 67, the Board of Education has at least gets notice and can agree to the CRA. What happened here? Is that part of the council's? That's not the council's issue. I mean, that's not the issue of the council, certainly.
Yeah, I believe the issue to go to the council is not in compliance to the contract. The issue here is whether they qualified in the first place under the statute, whether the property owner complied or not.
And was the board involved in that process under the pursuit of the statute?
The city grant sent the notice that was required under the old law before 1994. It did not send the notice required if the law changed. They believe the project was grandfathered.
And the record, there's no dispute about that, I guess, in the record.
No. But the schools received the notice that the old law required. They did not ask for their consent, which the new law requires. And for my 1 minute, I'd just like to say, reference Rickenbacker saying the special controls over the general. Rickenbacker specifically is based on a decision trying to give effect to both statutes. So the court can exempt this property under the statute other than the revised code 45-46. The 1 year limitation contained therein would have no effect. The only way to read those two statutes give effect to all of both was to reach that result. Here, the only way to give effect to both statutes is to define concurrent jurisdiction.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.